A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hannah sent us something that hit a very specific nerve this week. She and Daniel are flying to the States with Ezra, who'll be about 13 months old. Two transatlantic legs, two completely different airlines. Outbound on Emirates through Dubai. Return on Delta through Athens with a self layover. And she's terrified, because Ezra never stops moving, doesn't sleep outside his bed, and she's picturing 10 hours of screaming while everyone stares. She wants a full walkthrough. Food, sleep, occupying a baby who wants to crawl in a seat. The width of a laptop.
And she's right to be nervous. A crawling baby who isn't walking yet is the single hardest phase for long-haul travel. They have the physical drive to move constantly, but zero ability to understand why they can't. They can't be parked in front of a screen, they can't be reasoned with, and they're heavy enough that holding them for 10 hours destroys your back. But here's the thing Hannah might not realize yet. The asymmetry between these two flights is actually an advantage. Emirates and Delta are playing completely different games when it comes to infants.
One of them provides bassinets and baby meals and priority boarding. The other provides a seat and good luck.
So this episode is a tactical walkthrough. We're following one specific itinerary, and we're going to cover what each airline actually promises, then layer on the parent-tested strategies that fill the gaps. The three core problems are movement restriction, sleep disruption, and feeding logistics. Each one gets amplified on a transatlantic leg in ways they just aren't on a three-hour domestic hop.
And a self-layover in Athens is a wild card. A full day in an airport with a one-year-old sounds like a circle of hell, but Athens actually has some infrastructure that makes it survivable. We'll get there.
Let's start with what the airlines actually promise, because the policies are surprisingly different, and most of what parents assume is wrong.
Emirates first, since that's the outbound and frankly the easier leg. What does their official infant policy actually say?
Emirates provides bassinet seats on their A380 and 777 aircraft. You requested it booking, but here's the critical detail. It isn't guaranteed. You must confirm it 72 hours before departure, and even then it's first come, first served at the gate, and it's weight limited. Usually 11 kilograms, about 24 pounds. Ezra's probably right at the edge of that depending on how he's growing.
So Hannah should confirm at the 72-hour mark, and then get to the gate early and make herself known.
Yes. Walk up to the gate agent before boarding starts and say, "I have a bassinet request. Can you confirm I'm on the list?" Do it politely. Do it early. The bassinet itself is a hard plastic shell with a thin mattress, not a soft bed. Bring a familiar fitted sheet from home. The smell alone can help signal sleep to a baby who's completely disoriented.
What about food? Hannah said she assumed airlines don't feed lap babies.
That's the first big misconception. Emirates does. They provide baby meals, pureed fruits and vegetables, and they'll provide formula if you request it. But you have to order it 24 hours before the flight. Log into your booking, go to Manage My Booking, and add the infant meal. If you don't do that, they won't have it on board.
So the outbound leg, Emirates has her covered on food if she plans ahead. What else?
They stock diapers and wipes in the lavatory. Not enough for a full flight, but enough for emergencies. They do priority boarding for families with infants, and this is the thing that matters for the movement problem. The Emirates A380 has a bar and lounge area at the back of the upper deck. It's designed for adults to stand and socialize, but flight attendants are completely used to parents pacing there with babies. It's an unofficial baby track.
A bar as a baby pacing zone is a beautiful repurposing of infrastructure.
It really is. Now, let's flip to Delta. The return leg is a completely different experience. Most Delta transatlantic routes use narrow-body aircraft or configurations where bassinets are extremely limited. Some 767 and 777 aircraft have them, but you can't count on it. Assume no bassinet. Delta doesn't provide complimentary meals for lap infants. No baby food, no formula, nothing. You bring everything.
And priority boarding.
Delta doesn't offer priority boarding for families with infants. You board with Main Cabin 1, which is after First Class, after Delta 1, after Diamond Medallion, after Comfort Plus. By the time you get on, overhead space might be tight, and you're navigating a narrow aisle with a baby while 100 people are already seated and watching you.
So the outbound is Emirates playing concierge, and the return is Delta playing bus driver.
That's not entirely fair to Delta, but directionally, yes. The Delta crews are professional. They'll help if you ask, but the policy framework just isn't built around infant support the way Emirates is, which means Hannah needs two completely different packing and strategy lists for these two flights.
All right, let's talk about the thing that's actually keeping her up at night. The movement problem. Ezra crawls constantly. A coach seat is about 17 inches wide. How do you handle a baby who needs to crawl for hours in a space smaller than a bathtub?
You don't. You can't. The seat is for feeding, brief play, and lap naps. For everything else, you leave the seat. The aisle becomes your territory during cruise. On the Emirates A380, you've got that bar area I mentioned, plus wide aisles on the main deck. Walk laps. Let him crawl on the galley floor if the flight attendants give you the nod, which they often do when the cabin is dark and service is done. Bring a carrier, something structured like an ergobaby or a tula. Not a wrap, wraps are too hot and too fiddly in a confined space. The carrier lets you stand and sway in the galley, which can buy you 20 minutes of calm, and it's hands-free so you can eat or drink.
And for the seat itself, when you're trapped there during takeoff, turbulence, landing.
Bring a busy board or silicone suction toys that stick to the tray table. Spinning gears, flaps, buttons, anything that gives his fingers something to do. The tray table is your only hard surface, and suction toys turn it into a temporary activity station. Also, the snack drip method. One Cheerio at a time, placed deliberately, spaced out. It's not about nutrition. It's about occupying the hands and the mouth for as many minutes as possible.
One Cheerio at a time sounds like feeding a very small printer.
That's exactly what it is, and it works. The other tactic is surprise toy rotation. Before the flight, wrap 5 small toys in wrapping paper or tissue. Not expensive toys. A small car, a finger puppet, a poppet fidget, a teething ring, a mini board book. The unwrapping is the activity. It buys you 5 to 10 minutes per toy, and the novelty of a new object buys you another 10. Space them out across the flight.
So the movement strategy is basically accept that the seat is a base camp, not a cage, and plan to spend most of the cruise phase walking, standing, and rotating through distractions.
Yes. And on the Emirates leg, you've got the bassinet, which changes the equation. If Ezra will sleep in it, you get hands-free hours. But on the Delta return, assume no bassinet. Assume he's on your lap or in the carrier the whole time. That's the leg where you really need the Athens layover strategy to work.
Let's talk about sleep. Hannah said Ezra doesn't sleep well outside his bed in a dark room. How do you even begin to get a one-year-old to sleep on a plane?
The Emirates leg is likely overnight, given the Dubai routing and time zone shift. That's actually an advantage. Here's the red-eye reset strategy. Keep Ezra awake through boarding and takeoff. Don't let him nap early. You want sleep pressure building. After takeoff, when the seatbelt sign goes off, do a full bedtime routine in the air. Pajamas, a fresh diaper, a small feed, white noise playing from your phone. Download the white noise beforehand. Don't rely on in-flight Wi-Fi. Hold him and rock in the galley until he's drowsy, then transfer to the bassinet. Put the familiar sheet in first so it smells like home. If he wakes up mid-flight, repeat the galley rock.
And if he simply won't sleep?
Then you survive. You trade off with Daniel in shifts. One of you sleeps while the other walks. You accept that some crying will happen, and you remind yourself that the people around you were babies once and most of them are wearing noise. Cancel in headphones anyway. The goal isn't zero crying. The goal is minimizing duration and keeping your own nervous system regulated so you don't escalate the situation.
The Delta return is likely daytime, which means the sleep strategy is completely different.
Right. On the daytime return, accept that Ezra may not sleep much. Plan for a no-sleep scenario. If he naps, it's a gift. If he doesn't, you've already mentally prepared. The carrier is your primary tool here. Walking the aisle with him strapped to your chest might produce a short nap, and even 20 minutes resets the clock on fussiness. But don't pin your hopes on a full sleep cycle. The Athens layover is where you make up the sleep deficit.
Which brings us to the self-layover. A full day in Athens airport with a baby who's already been on one flight and needs to get on another. What's actually there?
Athens International has two things Hannah needs to know about. First, there's a children's play area near Gate 10, post security in the main terminal. It's open 24 hours, and it has a soft play structure that works for crawlers. Slides, padded surfaces, space to move. This is where you burn energy between flights. Second, there's a sleep zone with reclining chairs near Gate B. Not ideal for a baby, but usable for one parent to nap while the other watches Ezra.
And there's a hotel.
The Sofitel Athens Airport is connected to the terminal via a covered walkway. You don't even go outside. They offer day rooms from about 80 euros for a 4-hour block, and you can request a crib. Book through dayuse.com or directly with the hotel. This is the single best investment Hannah can make on this trip. A 4-hour block in a real room with a real bed and a real floor where Ezra can crawl freely. He naps in the crib, you shower, you reset, you go back through security and board the second flight as a slightly more human version of yourself.
80 euros to not lose your mind is a bargain.
It's the best money she'll spend on the entire trip. If she doesn't book the day room, the play area and the recliners are the backup plan. But the day room turns the layover from a survival test into an actual reset.
All right, let's get into feeding logistics. This is where the two airlines diverge most sharply, and where advanced planning makes or breaks the trip.
For the Emirates outbound, order the baby meal 24 hours before the flight. That gives you pureed fruits and vegetables and formula if you request it. But here's the thing, even with the meal ordered, bring backup pouches. 4 to 6 of them. The meal might arrive when Ezra isn't hungry, or he might reject the specific puree they serve. Ella's kitchen pouches, or similar. They count as liquids for carry-on purposes, but TSA and most international security agencies allow reasonable quantities of baby food beyond the 3.4-ounce limit. You declare them separately at screening. Put them in a clear bag, pull them out of your carry-on, and say these are for the baby.
Formula and breast milk are completely exempt from the liquid limit.
Completely exempt. Bring them in their original containers or in bottles. Declare them. They may do additional screening, but they can't confiscate them. Also, bring an empty thermos. Once you're past security, ask a flight attendant or a coffee shop to fill it with hot water. That's how you warm bottles on the plane. Don't rely on the flight attendant having hot water exactly when you need it. The thermos gives you control.
And for the Delta return, she's fully self-sufficient.
Fully. Delta provides nothing for lap infants. Pack 8 to 10 pouches. That sounds like a lot, but remember you're covering 2 flights with a layover in between, and you'd rather have too many than run out over the Atlantic. Pack formula or breast milk for the full journey plus 20% extra. Pack the empty thermos. Pack bibs, wipes, a change of clothes for yourself because you'll get food on you. Pack more than you think you need. The penalty for overpacking is a slightly heavier carry-on. The penalty for underpacking is a hungry baby at 35,000 feet.
And the Athens layover complicates the food math, because she needs enough to cover the first flight, the layover, and the second flight.
Yes. But Athens Airport has restaurants and shops post-security. She can buy fresh food there for herself and Daniel, and possibly find yogurt or simple foods for Ezra. But don't rely on airport shops having exactly what a 1-year-old will eat. The pouches are your insurance policy.
Let's talk about the scenario Hannah is dreading most. The screaming in seat moment where nothing works. Ezra is overtired, overstimulated, and he's letting the entire cabin know it. What do you actually do?
First, accept that this will probably happen at some point. Not because Hannah is doing anything wrong, but because a 13-month-old on a 10-hour flight is an impossible situation and some crying is inevitable. The goal is to minimize duration. Walk to the galley. The galley is your reset button. It's brighter, there's space, there are flight attendants who have seen this 1,000 times. Apologize if you want, but they genuinely don't need it. They know. Ask if there's an empty row you can move to. This happens more often on Emirates than Delta, but it's always worth asking.
And if you're stuck in the seat during turbulence or landing?
The surprise toy rotation and the snack drip. One wrapped toy, unwrap slowly, one Cheerio at a time. If he's truly melting down and you've tried everything, put him in the carrier and stand if the seatbelt sign allows it. The vertical position and pressure can be calming. If you're forced to stay seated, hold him firmly against your chest, make low shushing sounds near his ear, and breathe slowly. He'll feel your heart rate. If you're panicking, he's panicking. If you can get yourself calm, you've got a shot at getting him calm.
There's also the psychological frame here, which I think matters more than any specific product.
Reframe the flight as survival mode, not enjoyable travel. Lower expectations to zero. The only metric that matters is that everyone arrives safe. Ezra won't remember this flight. You will, but you'll also forget the worst parts within a month. That's not toxic positivity. That's just how memory works. The acute misery of parenting an infant in a confined space fades fast. What stays is the trip, the family, the photos of Ezra meeting his grandparents. The flight is the toll you pay to get there.
And on the Emirates leg, you're paying a lower toll because the airline is actually helping. On the Delta leg, you're paying full freight, but you've got the Athens reset in the middle.
Right, and that Athens reset is the strategic centerpiece of the whole return journey. If Hannah books that day room, the return becomes two medium-hard flights with a real break in between, instead of one endless nightmare.
Let me pull all of this together into something Hannah can actually back against. Outbound Emirates flight. Step 1. Request the bassinet seat now. Don't wait. Confirm it 72 hours before departure. Step 2. Order the baby meal 24 hours before. Step 3. Pack 4 to 6 backup pouches, a familiar fitted sheet for the bassinet, white noise downloaded on your phone, and 5 small wrapped toys. Step 4. Board during family priority boarding, and after takeoff, do the full bedtime routine. Pajamas, feed, white noise, galley rocking, bassinet transfer.
Return Delta flight. Step 1. Accept full self-sufficiency. Pack 8 to 10 pouches, empty thermos, formula or breast milk in original containers, carrier, suction toys, wrap toys. Step 2. Book a day room at the Sofitel Athens for the middle of your layover. 4 hours, real bed, real floor, shower, reset. Step 3. Plan for no sleep on the plane. If Ezra naps, celebrate. If he doesn't, you expected it. The carrier is your primary tool for aisle walking. Step 4. Download videos before the flight. Ms. Rachel, Bluey, whatever might catch his attention. Even if he doesn't watch screens now, the novelty of a glowing rectangle in a dark cabin might buy you 15 minutes.
And the one thing that changes everything on both flights. Ask for help. Flight attendants on Emirates will warm bottles, hold the baby while you use the bathroom, bring extra snacks. On Delta, they're more limited by policy, but they're still human beings who will help if you ask. The worst thing you can do is suffer in silence because you don't want to bother anyone. Bother them. That's what they're there for.
I'd add one more thing. Bring a change of clothes for yourself in your carry-on, not just for Ezra. A blowout or a spill pouch at 35,000 feet is a long way to sit in someone else's lunch.
There's a question hanging over this whole plan that Hannah kind of nodded at. Ezra might be walking by the return flight. He's not walking now, but a lot changes in a few weeks at this age. How does that change the strategy?
If he's walking, the movement problem gets both better and worse. Better because walking toddlers can burn energy in the aisle in a way crawlers can't. You can hold his hands and let him toddle up and down during cruise. Worse because a walking toddler who's told to stay in a seat has a much bigger objection. The carrier becomes even more important as a containment tool, and the Athens play area becomes essential. A walking toddler can actually use the slides in the soft play structure, whereas a crawler is more limited.
So the packing list might need to flex depending on whether he hits that milestone before the trip.
Yes, but the core strategy doesn't change. Bassinet, carrier, pouches, wrap toys, day room, ask for help. Those 6 things are the backbone regardless of whether he's crawling or walking.
The flight is temporary. The trip is worth it. Hannah and Daniel have survived harder days of parenting. This is just a long one, and now they've got a plan.
If you're listening and you've got a travel with baby hack that saved your sanity, we want to hear it. Email the show at prompts@myweirdprompts.com. We'll compile the best ones into a follow-up episode. Hannah's not the only parent staring down a transatlantic flight this summer.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. Find every episode at myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore. A thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.